Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Well, today's tax day, and I hope you didn't file for an extension like I did. This day is important because it's when we give our hard-earned money to the government in an important transaction. We pay our taxes and government provides services. One of the most important services is public education, which is supported by some federal money, some state money, and local property taxes. Public education was conceived back in the 1800s as the best way to turn children into good citizens and into people with the skills for the modern era. Of course that's a good idea, but how do we pay for our public schools? And as times change and oil revenues decrease, how do we mold a sustainable plan for a good education for our kids? There are resources on our own state's website that help explain how we pay for schools here in Alaska, and we've listed many of them on alaskapublic.org. But we've also invited some experienced school leaders to talk us through it. Our goal is to explain in plain language the basic setup for funding public education so that any citizen can understand the process and feel empowered to engage with questions or suggestions. We welcome your questions here today. If you don't understand something we're talking about, or maybe you want to pitch a better idea, give us a call at 550-8433. Today's show is really not about the budget bills moving through Juneau as we speak. We're taking the long view here, explaining how we currently pay for schools and looking toward sustainability for the future. So I want to introduce our guests and thank them very much for taking time out of incredibly busy schedules to be here with us. First, I'd like to welcome Steve Atwater, who's on the phone from Fairbanks. Welcome, Steve.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
I am great. Steve was on this show once before, I believe when you were superintendent of the Kenai Borough School District, but I know you have also experience with Lake and Penn School District and a new job up in Fairbanks with the University of Alaska. What are you doing in a sentence, Steve, if you can do that?
Yeah, I'm with the University of Alaska, the statewide system, associate vice president for K-12 outreach, which is a position working to bring the K-12 and the university more tightly aligned. Is the most easy way to explain it.
Mm-hmm. So big job, statewide job.
Yeah, no, it's new, relatively new, or it is new. And so it's a much needed job, though. The goal is to have a K-20 continuum so that both systems are talking very well to one another so that the kids can transition between the two systems mm-hmm. seamlessly.
Mm-hmm. That's great. All right, and I'd like to also welcome Luke Phelps, who's the business officer for the Mat-Su Borough School District. Welcome, Luke.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me today.
I knew right away when I talked to you on the phone that I wanted to invite you on the radio because you were so comfortable talking about school budgets and also that you have done forums for your own district to try to explain to the public how this works. And I thought, well, that's the guy for the show then. So thank you so much. I also know you did radio, what did you say, Radio Free Palmer?
Radio Free Palmer, yes. When you presented the idea of doing a show like the one we're doing today and just talking in general terms about school funding and it making sense to the public. Just several weeks ago, I did a similar show for Radio Free Palmer where they brought me in and we just discussed it.
It can be done.
Yeah.
And our third guest today is Kathleen Plunkett. Welcome, Kathleen. We share the first same name, so that
absolutely.
Was our beginning connection. You're on the school board. You're also an accountant. When I looked at your resume, there's a ton of community service and volunteering that you have done in Anchorage, and I guess being on the school board is an extension of that for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's been a part of my family life growing up from a very young age.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a hot seat, as we'll probably talk about today. It's a contentious issue. People care a lot about their kids. They want good outcomes. And they sometimes come to you, I'm sure, and pour out their concerns.
But at the same token, we all want good outcomes
yeah.
for our kids, for all of our kids, because we have some amazing kids in this state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The potential is tremendous. So, and I also want to throw out our phone numbers just in case folks want to engage or you might want to listen a while and get a piece that you can hook onto and ask a question. But in Anchorage, we welcome your calls at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Before the show started, we were sitting here and I was saying, I think it's a bit of a gamble to try to do a show on school finance without trying to get into the battleground that is always ongoing when your budget, your state budget is moving. And that is not the goal of today's show. It is really to try to arm people with enough information so that when they read newspaper articles about it, or they, you know, their legislator comes and visits them, they feel like they can actually ask a question about it and, you know, be empowered to find out more. So that's the goal. When I conceived of the show, Steve sent me a wonderful document that is on the school district's, I found it on the state's education and early development website, and it's called Public School Funding Program Overview. I know that isn't scintillating, it isn't a novel, but we're going to walk through it kind of in human terms today with the help of these three experts. And you can find the link if you want your own copy. It's on alaskapublic.org, which is easy to remember, under Hometown Alaska. But we're going to start there and try to explain it and talk about it in terms that anybody can understand. So I think we're going to go ahead and start with, we did a little bit of bio already, but I thought I would start with, schools are funded by federal, state, and local money. And this is, anybody can chime in here or I'll catch your eye and send you the question. But there is federal money, there is state money, there's local. In Alaska, our state money is basically oil money, right? It's the state budget. It's unrestricted funds from the state budget, right?
Yes.
Then there's also property taxes, local, and that's very local, right?
Yes. Property or sales tax.
Some places have sales tax, like Mat-Su would have some sales that would apply to education.
Ours is property tax. That's where area-wide property tax is where the majority of our funding comes from.
And same for Anchorage, right?
Yes.
But if you get to some place like
Kenai uses sales tax and property tax.
Kenai is sales and property tax, but it's majority, or it's very common that it's going to be property tax, although I was thinking if you get to some place like Unalakleet or Bethel or even a smaller area, would there be as much property tax there?
And no.
So there's a compensation factor there?
Right. The unincorporated areas of the state do not tax, and so there is no local contribution from the unincorporated parts. At some point, though, we should talk about impact aid, which is part of that conversation, but the local people are not paying taxes for where they live in unincorporated areas of the state.
Are those REAAs?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And also in the boroughs, some of the larger boroughs, there's no property tax, too, like Northwest Arctic and Lake Peninsula.
Uh-huh. So it's really a kind of variable recipe for the way schools get funded. And the federal piece of it is really, I'm thinking of Title I, or I see Title VIII. These must be federal benefits that schools can apply for. Could you speak to that, Steve?
Yeah, there's federal money, which is termed entitlement money. It's not competitive. The districts are entitled to it based on various factors. And that amounts, I believe, to about $100 million total. Luke might have a better number, but I think that's about the number the state brings into it and then passes on to school districts.
Now, I my notes tell me Title VIII is impact aid, the thing that you mentioned earlier. Is that what Title – that's federal money? Okay.
Right. That's federal money. That's property tax in lieu of, and so that's not available for all school districts. It's only when you have non-taxable lands.
That's one of those compensating factors, like if you don't have a lot of property tax to draw from, you might get impact aid.
Right. And it gets tricky because the state maintains a piece of, or the vast majority of that impact aid as to offset a lack of a local contribution. But if you do have a local contribution, you're allowed to keep more of your impact aid than if you don't have a local contribution. So lots of little variances in play, but the money that comes from the feds is for non-taxable land. Usually it's for native land, but it's also for military land. So Anchorage and Fairbanks get impact aid because of military.
Okay.
We have quite a bit from J-Bear, and that just is reduced off of our state amount that's paid.
Okay. So it's a really unique recipe depending on where you are and the makeup of your land and all kinds of stuff. So it's one size does not fit all. There is not one single way to look at this. But it is, the funding is made up of those three. And then I think grants. Kathleen, you brought up grants, and I hadn't put them on my list as another source of income for school districts.
Yes, it's a small percentage. Grants or even the other thing you could maybe lump under the local would be uses. You know, like we have a sports fee, et cetera, those kind of things, along with the grants.
Right, to pay for athletics at this school. So, Okay, so, and grants can be private, they can be public. I mean, it just, school personnel look for those opportunities if they've got something that could match up. So if you had a school that was really good at getting grants, it could be a good thing for your school, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. So is there a way to, I mean, I have a sense that federal funding is like 12% or something like that. State is about 40.
Even less than that in some cases.
Yeah.
Again, it's a different recipe for every school. But in gross terms, and again, property tax is going to vary so much, and that impact aid is going to come in to fill that gap if there isn't taxable property. But if you were sort of giving gross chops of what's federal, what's state, and what's property tax, can you do that, say, for Mat-Su or for Anchorage?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly do that. In Mat-Su, we do not qualify for impact aid funding.
You have a lot of taxable property.
We do. And there's different layers of the impact aid program. Steve mentioned it well as Kathleen, in terms of it's really a basis for the federal government to step in and fund for those pupils who are federally connected. So it's for federally connected children. And the biggest amount of money comes for those students that are living on. And not only is their parent enlisted, but they're living on the base. And so there's no opportunity for the school district to even tax real or personal property for that family. And so there's a bigger number for them there. But because Mat-Su doesn't qualify for impact aid funding, our funding really breaks down to about 75% comes from the state of Alaska, 24% from the Mat-Su borough, and then 1% is federal funding from the E-rate program and whatnot.
Okay, so it really can vary.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When I referred to 12%, I've been reading all these articles across the country, and they, you know, try to average everything out.
Yeah. So, I guess I should mention that those numbers are strictly for our operating revenue or our operating budget. Kathleen mentioned the special revenues or the grants. That's outside of that number, and those would be additional federal funds would fall into there, as well as state direct grants.
Go ahead, Kathleen.
And I guess I did a mix. We have some that I would consider that are really grants, but that would fall under our local or fees based. But our federal is only about 3%. 60% is how much we get from the state. About 33%, about a third, is what we get from our local. And then if you look at the items that would really be general fund related or fees, that's about 4%.
When you say general fund, what do you mean? You don't mean state general fund. You mean
by general fund, I mean what, basically for me, I think of it as what do we use to actually operate the schools that's separate from some of the federal grants, such as Title I or capital or bus transportation or even PERS TERS. Getting a young man or young woman educated, that piece of the pie.
I'll try not to make it too complicated. I know that the idea is to just communicate in broad terms to the public for the show, but the general fund is really your operating revenue for
within your district.
Within your district for really, and it's up to the board in terms of discretionary purposes. The board sets that budget. The board spends that money. It's really the largest chunk of funds that come to the school district is makes up your general fund or operating budget. What's kind of some caveats to that are pupil transportation has its own special revenue fund outside of the operating budget.
So pupil transportation, you mean student transportation?
Student transportation. Pupil.
Okay.
Yes.
Pupil. Oh,
yes, I'm sorry.
I think pupil. Okay.
And then on top of that, nutrition services. So those are two operating components of the school district, but they do have their own fund outside of that. Really, special revenue funds are set up for any revenue that comes through that has a dedicated purpose. And so if there's a directive or a program, a mission that goes along with those funds, we have to account for it separately outside of the general fund and make sure we report on that separately. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the big difference. And then on top of that, we have student funds, which we hold in as a fiduciary capacity because they belong to the students. The students fundraise those funds. We don't have access to them to say we want to spend it this way.
It doesn't go into your general fund.
Right. And so there's ways that we kind of keep things separate.
So
and
there's
organize.
Lots of buckets. There's a fair number of buckets to think about.
Yes.
No wonder they have accountants working for them. But it also makes me think of a small city or something like that. There's just so much that has to get done, from transportation to food to even health, you know, and then there's education on top of that. So there's a lot that has to go on. So Okay. Then I wanted to sort of deal with what the BSA is, which I take is a starting point for figuring out what a district is going to get for its students. And before I do that, I'm just going to throw out our numbers and remind folks of, if you just tuned in and you're wondering, where are they going in this conversation? We are talking about sort of school funding 101, trying to arm citizens with the information they might need to ask questions of their legislators or their school district personnel about how schools get paid for. So one more time, we've got Steve Atwater on the phone from Fairbanks. He's the Steve is the vice president, associate vice president for K-12 outreach for the University of Alaska. Luke, and this, is it Pulp?
Fulp.
I was saying Phelp. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Luke Fulp is here with us in the studio. He's the business officer for the Mat-Su Borough School District and really comfortable giving public forums on education funding. And then we have Kathleen Plunkett in the studio with me. She's an Anchorage School District school board member and community member here. So that's who's discussing and unpacking school budgets with us. And if you have got a question or something you don't understand as we go through it, please give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I wanted to kind of tackle that thing that you see in newspaper stories, the BSA. We've certainly heard a lot about it this legislative session. Can I point to you, Luke, and say, give us a definition of the BSA? Or you can punt this to Steve if you want.
Yeah, no, I won't put Steve in the hot seat. The BSA really is, it's the end of the formula. So As school districts go through the process of figuring out what funding is going to come down from the state in any particular year, the foundation formula is basically a formula meant to adjust your student population or what they refer to as your average daily membership, because it's an average of the enrollment over a 20-day period.
Right. Those key days in early October, like when the teachers want everybody in the seat, because that you start with that number.
You do start with that number.
It's a student population number. Okay.
So do we want to run through the formula at this point, or do you just want to talk about the BSA?
Well, I want people to I was wrong. I was thinking it was the beginning point. It's the end point. So you get your – say you have 10,000 students – that's your beginning point. Okay,
yes.
Then let's walk through the steps. That'd be great.
Okay.
And I'll stop you if I don't understand.
All right. So you may be educating about, like, I'm just going to use Mat-Su numbers, for example.
That's fine.
We educate around 18,000 students per day. But because of the way the state has us determine average daily membership, they, for part-time students or students who are enrolled for only part of that 20 days, we have percentages of students. And so that's where the ADM comes in, is we're not talking about the total enrollment anymore. We're talking about these factors, because maybe a student attends 2 hours of school per day and then does correspondence. You know, and so there's just different
variables. Yeah. Okay.
Once you have your average daily membership, which really is reflects in large part what your enrollment is. It's not too different, but it does come up with these percentages. So you have that, it's called your average daily membership. You start applying the factors of the foundation formula to your average daily membership. And the first step is a school size adjustment. This adjustment is really meant to provide more funding for those smaller schools that have more overhead per student than the larger schools. And so there's factors, and it's a scaled approach, but basically you figure out how large each school is and where it fits into the formula based on that table for the school size adjustment.
Right.
That's the first thing you do.
So let me just say that, for example, a school in Barrow still has to turn the lights on even if they only have 10 students. And that's just
exactly.
Whereas a school in Mat-Su might have 50 kids in that classroom, still has to turn the lights on. And so it's those, if you have fewer students, you have fewer ability to pay for that.
Right.
That fixed cost. Okay.
Right.
So that's why you start to look at the size of the schools.
Yeah. And in addition to that, just the model of schools where you would have a school principal for, you know, a school of 100 students, that principal's there to supervise the staff, evaluate them, holds that Type B certification. So that's an administrative cost that's in addition, as well as just operational costs to heat and power the school. So that school size adjustment is really there to reflect the cost
Step one. Okay.
The district cost factor is next. That's step two. And that's what's referred to as the area cost differential across the state. So depending on the school district that, depending on the school district, the state's assigned a factor over the base of Anchorage. Anchorage is at 1.0.
Right.
Every other school district is incrementally higher than 1.0 because Anchorage is being recognized as the business and economic hub of Alaska. The theory there is that it's cheaper to do business in Anchorage than anywhere else in the state of Alaska.
Which seems true. Right. And Steve, you can chime in on anything if you have a correction for Luke or Kathleen, but go ahead. You're doing great.
Okay. The next step is what's called the special needs factor. It's a block grant within the foundation formula of 20%.
Okay.
It's set up for special programs that you find in education, such as bilingual education, special education, gifted, talented, vocational education, all of those critical components of the school programs. It's a straight factor. 20% is added on at that point. Step four is something that's relatively new to the foundation formula. That's a voc ed funding factor. So in recent years, the legislature's identified that there's a real need to have students career ready, job and career ready. And so this is the voc ed piece of that. And it's 1.5%. It's another block grant or set up to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, step five is to add in the correspondence students. So correspondence students are funded a little less than 1.0 FTE. They're funded actually at 0.9 FTE.
So they cost a little less?
The idea there is that they're not attending a facility. And mm-hmm. so we don't have that overhead cost associated with maintaining a facility mm-hmm. for that educational program. The other thing that they don't benefit from is that area cost differential, special needs factor in voc ed because of where it comes into the foundation formula. But this has been set up by economists and mathematicians and folks who really studied exactly how everything should fit into place. And so for whatever reason, they said correspondence doesn't get access to those other factors that's added in at the end. The other thing is intensive needs factor. For any student that meets the intensive need criteria that's established by the state of Alaska, those students' IEPs are reviewed and audited by the state to make sure that they meet those criteria. And they're funded at, we receive 13 FTE for each student that meets that criteria. So it's high needs.
Okay. So it translates into bodies, working personnel.
Mm-hmm. Personnel working directly with the students and uh-huh. could be a one-to-one or one-to-three. There's mm-hmm. lots of different, but also equipment and so there's just a lot involved with providing services. And so there's a recognition that more funding is dedicated to that purpose. Mm-hmm. Once you're done with those six steps, mm-hmm. you have what's called your adjusted average daily membership. Mm-hmm. And so it's AADM is what the state refers to it. And typically that's much larger than your average daily membership. So your input is your average daily membership, your output's your AADM. Mm-hmm. And then you multiply that by the base student allocation to come up with what's referred to as basic need. The way the state, and it's a dollar figure because it's the numbers multiplied it by the base student allocation, which is a dollar amount. So that basic need is what the state says, this is what it costs to run and operate your school district. We're gonna fund the entire amount of this basic need less the required portion of your local contribution. Mm-hmm. So there's an expectation that if you are in an incorporated area, as Steve mentioned earlier, the borough is responsible for funding a portion of basic need, and that is makes up the full amount.
Okay. I think I'm still with you. I'm going to invite Kathleen or Steve.
I'm sorry.
Anything? No, you did a great job.
Okay.
It
does get complicated fast.
Well, it does. And still, I'm trying to make it as accessible as possible. And I think you did a really great job. I can see the layering that's mm-hmm. required based on the different audiences you're serving or the different needs and identified, like the legislature identifying voc ed as an important thing that needs. So then the factor gets built in there. Does the formula change very often, or is it like once we have it? I mean, you mentioned the legislature deciding something was important, and so that happened. But how often does it get looked at?
Yeah, I believe that change was in fiscal year 2009 was uh-huh. when they added the voc ed funding factor. And they uh-huh. really don't make too many changes to the factors over time. What changes is that base student allocation.
That's what can
typically year to year. Because when you look at the formula it's set up to fund schools based on this methodology that they've chosen, and I'm not saying that this foundation formula doesn't get adjusted, it does, and mm-hmm. and it's had several iterations since even 1999. But what we refer to as kind of covering those inflationary costs from year to year, the formula is really set up for the base student allocation to take on that inflationary pressure, because that's the dollar amount that can change without changing any of the factors within the formula that serve as a base.
That's what you said. The base student allocation changes to accommodate inflation, not the formula.
Right.
Okay. I just want to touch base with Kathleen. You've been listening. Anything you want to jump in and add? We're going to talk about the base student allocation here next. But
the same basic steps that Luke went over are the different items. But mm-hmm. but every year, if the legislator wanted, they could obviously tweak the numbers. I thought that the correspondence student piece was 80% before and switched to 90% with last year.
That's right. They did change that last
year. So you could make some changes, because what they did is they looked at it and said correspondence students really have a mix. Some of them do have a building or a facility that they're using, so they really do need more resources, just as an example.
Okay. Here's my question. The formula doesn't get changed by the legislature. The base student allocation gets changed by the – or am I wrong about that?
No, it all gets changed.
The formula does get changed by the legislature.
Okay. The formula can be changed. Okay.
Right.
But it's universal across the state. Every school district deals with that.
The same,
right.
same formula.
This is the state's effort to level the playing field. If you tried to come up with 52 different BSAs, it would be a nightmare. And so what they've done, and Luke explained it really well, is to try and adjust and you know, meet the needs of all the kids across the state. And so different circumstances will require a little bit different funding. And so this is the effort. And then by and large, I think people are generally satisfied with it. There is a study that's being conducted right now, which may lead to recommendations that they go back and look at the formula. But I think there's a general consensus that how the formula is put together is accepted as being pretty fair.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. And this is sort of the toolkit for how you fund schools. I did hear about the study, a finance study. I think it was commissioned by the legislature, and I think it's due in June or July, something like that. Does that sound right, Steve? It is to, in one sense, take a look at our base student allocation and see if it's realistic, or is it to look at our formula versus other state formula? Is there some way to characterize? I know it's not your study. It's, I think, commissioned by the legislature, I think.
Right.
But can you speak
to
it?
Look at the formula, not the base student allocation.
Okay.
That would be a separate piece.
Okay.
How you arrive at the final amount for a student, is that the best way of doing it? Is that as equitable as it can be? And it's a really difficult thing to do when you think about how wide and varied Alaska is, from very remote places like Little Diomede.
Mm-hmm.
There's a school, probably our most remote school in Alaska, versus East High in Anchorage. And so it's very, very hard to do it well. And I think it's going to take some doing to undo it. But if it does, let's hope it makes it better.
Right. So we'll know more sometime in the summer, probably, I think, about that, right? That's kind of what I heard.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're going to take a little break. We're a half hour into it. Can you believe it? We were worried. How is this going to go? It's half over. But we're going to come back and talk more about the base student allocation, a little bit about its history and, you know, how it's changed, and try to explain that so people get it. That shows up in newspaper stories all the time, so you have a good understanding of that. But we'll be right back. This is Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Any one of us,
I think, can answer those.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, and I think that was Steve there in the background jumping in. We were having a little intermittent conversation about where to go next. We're talking about school funding 101. How do you understand how we pay for public schools? It's a timely topic. It's in the news, especially during the legislative season. Just trying to arm newspaper readers, parents, citizens with some of the details so that they understand how this goes. And it is thick, and we appreciate if you're hanging here with us, we really appreciate it. I'd like to thank, Steve Atwater, who's still with us in Fairbanks. Luke Fulp is here in the studio from the Mat-Su School District, and Kathleen Plunkett is here from the Anchorage School District. And I'll throw out our numbers one more time, 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And so that little chit-chat we were having in the middle of the break there was I was wanting to talk about the base student allocation. And Kathleen thought we'd been talking about that. We probably were, but I'm still, sort of trying to grasp it. So I thought there was a great chart I found on the State Department, Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, that kind of gave the BSA through history. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit. Steve, did you say you wanted to jump in? I'm sorry, there was music when you were talking.
No, I'd be happy to talk. And the base student allocation, as we finished up with at the end, is the piece at the end that the legislature has the most autonomy to play with. And that's the one that they get the most pressure to adjust. And so that's
Am I right to say that the average, the ADM, that number that you come up, the adjusted number, gets multiplied by this dollar amount?
That's correct.
Okay. So go ahead, Steve.
And maybe you should say what ADM is, because it's an acronym, right?
It is an
average daily membership.
Daily membership, yeah.
Which means
I don't think the public needs to get overly concerned with that. I think the big piece is that there is this number that the legislature can play with relatively easily, which is what they did last week, where they dropped it. And so that's the piece that is most in flux. The formula itself, as I said, gets periodically looked at and may get tweaked or changed. But by and large, I think there's a general acceptance that it does what it's intended to do, which is to try and level the playing field in terms of the money that goes out the door. As Luke mentioned, the efficiency or the economy of scale for schools varies all across the state, and this is a way to sort of account for that, so that it's somewhat fair.
Yeah, and actually, historically, the chart on the state's website shows that in 2005 it was 4,576, and it jumped a little bit to 4,919. And anyway, it just stair steps up to 5,830 right now. And also on the chart is something that discusses outside formula funding, and I think maybe we should talk a little bit about the base student allocation, which is a fixed dollar amount, and then what this outside formula funding is. Who wants to jump in and to tackle that? Silence.
I can volunteer on that one. Really, what we've seen is, and I think that, and Steve and Kathleen can chime in here too, but what schools have really requested of the legislature is to create some predictability about what's going to happen in the next few years. You know, as we develop our funding plans and long term, we always look long term. In terms of when I say long term, I mean maybe 3 years. We look 3 years out because we have the biggest majority of our costs is tied up in salaries and benefits, and we have negotiations, and we have to come to agreement with our employee groups. And and a lot of times, what we try to do is establish the longest term possible. And within the state of Alaska, longest term we're able to establish is a 3-year term, and so we're always trying to strategize, okay, how do we work with the board to manage those resources and know what's coming down the pike?
And when you say the board, you mean your local school board.
Okay. Yes. And so what's happened in the last few years is that there's been an inclination, at least from the state's part, to not know exactly what the revenue outlook is going to look like for the state of Alaska. So that what they've done is they've added one-time money in to the foundation formula, and it comes on top of the base student allocation. And so even though we've seen an increase into the base student allocation, we've also seen one-time money in addition to that. So originally it was for energy relief. It was when those fuel and oil prices spiked in 2012. That's just remained in the formula, and it's been kind of something that the legislature can play with because it's basically a straight appropriation. What's in the formula is built into state statute, so that becomes more reliable. These one-time monies is just an appropriation by the legislature. They can, make that 1 year at a time if they want.
Or not.
And so, and in years past, we were funded on a year-to-year basis. Pay-as-you-go is what it was referred to for a while under Governor Parnell. And last year, it was the second time, at least within the last 10 years, that the legislature put forth a long-term or multi-year funding plan. Mm-hmm. That was House Bill 278. And that's really what we were looking for. We were looking for that predictability.
That 3 years of
predictability. Okay. And able to plan around that. Now, obviously, no one knew the oil prices were going to
plummet
to the extent that they did. And so there's some things happening to where they're not appropriating the full amount or the governor's proposal to remove some of those one-time monies, at least for next year.
I'm going to come back and talk about the one-time versus the BSA, but I'd like to welcome Scott onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I as a business owner, I appreciate that the school district's inability to plan year to year without, you know, forward funding schools and guaranteeing funding. As a business owner, I couldn't do that if I wasn't able to reasonably forecast my revenues for the year. So it's a real difficult situation. But I've come to believe that I think this is the Republicans' war on education, and this is sort of the result that they want. Is they want to starve the public education system so much and create even more problems for our public education system that, you know, school vouchers and other backhanded ways to chip away at our public education system become ideas on the table. And mm-hmm. it's really sad.
Well, you know, I'm trying to stay out of beating up the legislators or any particular agenda here, but basically trying to give people the tools to ask the questions that they, you know. So, I mean, you come at it as a business owner, and I think you do understand the need for long-term planning. Is in your world, you know, I mean, you must have kids. Do you have kids in school here?
In one more year.
Well, in one more year. So you care about it. Do you feel like the people you know understand and feel engaged and know how to have an impact? I mean, that's the purpose of this, is to not have it be something happening to you, but that's something you can influence. And I guess that's the goal of the show. And I don't know.
And that's great. I mean, that, you know, as a parent and as a just, you know, a member of this community, I appreciate the premise of this show, because people really do have to get engaged. And I don't know what it's going to take for Juno to listen, but there's certainly overwhelming public opinion at play here, and Juno isn't listening, and I'm glad for your program today. Thanks.
Well, I thank you for taking the time to call in. I think it's a bit of an intimidating topic. And so I guess, Scott, one more question. If there's anything you want to know about school funding, we've got great experts on the phone. Do you feel like you understand it? I know you talked about long-term budgeting, but is there anything, other aspects of it, you wish you knew better?
Well, you know, I don't. I'm excited to hear the rest of the program today. I guess, you know, of all the places the legislature wastes money, from their fancy new offices to whatnot, if we were going to waste money in any place in this state budget, wouldn't it be on our children? And so that's, I guess, the thought I'd leave, and look forward to listening and learning what your guests continue to say here.
All right, Scott, we're going to continue to sort of unpack school funding, and thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. So let's see, we said we were going to get back to base student allocation. And one of my questions is there anything real about that number, or do we just need a number to start with? Does it, I sort of, as I try to get ready for the show, I kept reading school funding articles from around the country, and I started to wonder whether we just need a budgetary tool to begin with. So, you know, obviously we like to see that if the number goes up, you think, oh, that's going to have good effect. And maybe, Steve, this might get to your point about politics, I don't know, but I think the average person thinks if we're spending more money, we should see better results. But that might be a very simplistic view of what education is really all about, because what goes into education is in a state like Alaska, you know, like you said, we have Little Diomede and we've got East High. I mean, so,
right.
And
I
go ahead.
I think that the expectation that the public money that's invested in something will have a good return, I think that's a fair expectation, and that the public is certainly entitled and should feel that way. I think that's fair. But I think what people always, I think, look past is that in order for a school district to offer the same level of service the following year, so if you look at what you're doing this year and you roll it forward and do the exact same thing next year, it's going to cost more money. And that's, as Luke mentioned, you have labor agreements and teachers and administrators move through a step system inside or a salary schedule. That's predominantly why the price will go up. But basically, to offer the same level of service the following year, it's going to be more money. It's going to cost more money. And school districts have been scrambling for years to find efficiencies, knowing that they can't really meet that need in terms of expecting that full amount of more money to do the same service. So when you say you're going to put more money into education, you're not expanding service. I think that's an important piece, is when you're putting more money into education, and in many cases, you're just maintaining a level of service. And I think that's an important one that people do understand, is that your balloon isn't blowing up and being bigger. It's maintaining the same size, but it's taking more money to maintain it
right.
at that size. And so I think
right.
that's an important distinction that has to be made, because when people look at more money for education, the automatic assumption is that there'll be more money invested, so therefore better results. And while that's a fair expectation, it doesn't translate one-to-one like that.
Right. You know, one thing that just jumped into my head was, well, gosh, we should be seeing lots of savings in gas, you know, right now, because gas has plummeted. Mm-hmm. And I joke all the time that I'm waiting for cheaper airline tickets, you know. But where are
but
the benefits?
It depends when you bought your fuel.
That's
I mean, all the rural
districts
buy their fuel in October or September or August. And so they locked into those high prices for the whole year.
Uh-huh.
And so they do not have any adjustment. And
so that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's
no,
interesting.
It's when the barge shows up in August or September with the fuel. And so that's another piece of Alaska that people need to understand. It's very different from Anchorage, which will have a fluctuating price that way.
Yeah. Well, when I looked, you know, across the country and read some articles about what states spend and then how their districts rank, it's really all over the map. It led me to just think this isn't really a valuable comparison, but, you know, Colorado, I was reading something from 2012, and it talked about Colorado being spending the least amount of money, but being up in the top 10 academically. You know, there were overarching arguments like the Northeast tends to do well academically. The West tends to spend more on its schools, having some high performers. I mean, there's just so much that goes into how much you have to spend on a school, and sort of linking it tightly to student performance maybe is naive.
It is. It's not a one-to-one causal type relationship, and it'd be nice if it was, but the variables that affect student achievement are many, and you know, a lot of that, how students perform depends on a lot of other things besides how much money is being spent. Certainly that's a big piece of the equation and it shouldn't be ignored, but to have that as a causal relationship where more money will automatically lead to more achievement is not necessarily true.
Oh, go ahead, Kathleen.
The one thing I'll point out, though, is that we should always, and I think we always are, looking at areas for efficiencies and where we can still get the best bang for our buck for our students and find a better way to do it. Or is this program much better than that program? And I know one of the areas that we've been working on that is higher than it has been in the past is healthcare.
Oh, my gosh. It's across the state.
Yeah. And it is. It's across the state. And anything we can do to work together for that, I know there's a consortium that we've been working on for, you know, public, private, nonprofits, kind of pulling everyone in. And by using that, at least this last year, we were able to kind of contain and stay even.
That is the hard nut to crack. The healthcare costs in Alaska, boy, that would be a good topic, right? Because it is affecting.
It's much
everybody.
More expensive
yes.
in Alaska than
yeah.
in Seattle.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to welcome a caller on our show. Carissa, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. My question, I have seen, at least in the last couple years, the bonds in Anchorage and some of the other school districts have been passed. So I believe that the public is supportive of public education. And so I'm inquiring because other states in which I have had friends and relatives teach in, the school districts there have the voters vote for the mill levy. So we have a direct impact on what your budget is. Whereas in Anchorage, the only thing we vote on is the capital budget projects. And I'm wondering if that's a state regulation, municipal regulation, and why the school districts haven't looked into doing a system more like that so I, as a taxpayer, can choose whether or not to increase my tax specifically for the school district rather than the municipality having a 12 people on the assembly, you know, having that power, I guess you can say, on their budget.
Really good question.
That's all predicated on state statute. So that's the way the state's set up. The way that local municipalities fund school systems, and the way that so they have area-wide powers over education, and within that, it's been provided no taxing authority to school systems. They're we up here in Alaska, we're solely dependent on appropriations both from the state of Alaska and our local municipalities. So it's just the way that the state's set things up for us.
So
is that not something that might be worthwhile to look into? At least I know that there are going to be areas in the state that would not be able to benefit from that because of the tax system, as you guys discussed earlier. But boy, it seems like an opportunity that we're losing in some of these larger places, because it is that the if I'm going to pay property tax, I sure would rather it go to the school districts and support you guys rather than, you know, having it appropriated by the municipality itself, their government.
I still think that there's a public process that's built into our system that allows taxpayers and citizens to attend assembly or assembly meetings and vocalize their support for education while the assembly considers the local appropriation. So during that time within their own budget process, folks can go to their assemblies and voice their express their interest in their government funding education through that appropriation. But yeah, it's not as not a direct link like you'll find in other states.
Huh, that's
right.
It's interesting.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, I, as a taxpayer, I appreciate that that you believe that we have that input, but I don't feel that we do. I think that when you see the enormous support that the bonds do in light of the state budget, I was shocked at how many bonds and the amount of bonds that passed in Anchorage for capital projects for the school district passed when the state is, you know, it's the budget in general that I really think that, at least for me, being able to vote yes or no would be a much more direct and impactful opportunity for me to tell the municipality what I want to support. But I appreciate that, and I'll take the rest of it off the air. So thank you.
Thanks, Carissa. I really appreciate you calling
in. So, Carissa, maybe what I might add as well is I think in other parts of the country, in our case, the state pays 60% of Anchorage's operating funds for education, where I think Luke said Mat-Su was 75%. So that's the other piece you have to key in on there as well, is that a good portion of our dollars don't come just from our local source. They also come from the state, where only about a third of our dollars come from the local source. But I think there's pros and cons to whether you're a dependent school district versus whether you have taxing authority.
You know, Kathleen, as we were getting ready for the show, you mentioned, I'm thinking about Carissa's point that, and Luke also talking about, there are times when you get to go before your assembly and support schools. And I thought maybe we should talk a little bit about what happens in Anchorage, and you can talk to the timing. So when people need to know, I should be paying attention now. Maybe now is the time I do that visit to the assembly or whatever. And you also mentioned that you were working on timing, maybe, of the school budget related to the assembly. I didn't. So let's just talk about when citizens should be paying attention. When does that happen in Anchorage, and we'll talk about Mat-Su. And Steve, if you've got anything to add, you can jump in anytime. But go ahead, Kathleen.
So for Anchorage in the fall, we start looking at our budget assumptions in terms of what all do we want to include, what do we want the administration to look at. You know, how does that look and feel based on information and on the BSA dollar amounts that we've gotten from the state. And we do have that number that we can depend on, at least as a starting point. In Anchorage, currently in statute or in our charter, we have to submit our budget by the first Monday in March, which is real early in the process. As long as I've been on the school board, which is 6 years, we've done two budgets. We do an initial budget based on the prior assumptions, and then once the legislature closes out, we do a second one based on the final. And that's something I've been working on for about a year and got actually some traction this year to say, is it possible to move that closer to the first part of May and still get the same thing where we would have a better idea and maybe can only do one budget?
One budget, okay. And the end of May being you would have...
Or not the end of May, the first... By the end of April, you'd have a pretty good feel, so it'd be the first part of May. So if I said the end of May, I apologize.
I might have misspoken. What I mean is that's enough time to know what the legislature has settled on a budget.
Right.
The governor has 60 days.
Well, the governor
days,
hasn't it? Signed it, but yeah. it still gives you a good feel.
Better than last year's. Better
yes.
than working on last year. So that's a. But anyway, the key thing for people is when to pay attention. And you're saying fall is when you have your
two times. Fall is when we look at our assumptions and what's really most important to make sure we include. And then in terms of taking it to the assembly, right now it's the first part of March and it has to be approved by the first part of April or the end of March for them. And it would be just moving it a couple months if we're successful.
Mm-hmm. How about the Matsu Borough? When are the key times for people to weigh in? And you don't have a city assembly, so are you presenting your budget
to the borough assembly?
Borough assembly.
Yeah.
So when does that go?
Yeah, that is really based on borough code for us, and I'm assuming that it's a
city code
here as well. Our budget is due to the assembly or due to the borough by April 1st. And so that's kind of the timeline we operate under. So we actually submitted our budget several weeks ago and we held a joint session last night to discuss it and present it to the borough assembly.
With numbers in flux.
Yeah, we present revenue scenarios.
Okay.
And so we don't know what's going to happen, and this is really the week that things are going to be decided in Juneau. But even with that, we have an idea of maybe it's this scenario or conversely, we get all the funding we're looking for. So we present all those different scenarios and really tell the borough assembly what it is that we're requesting. And they've got 30 days to, based on state statute, once a school district submits their budget to their local municipality or assembly, that they've got 30, that assembly then has 30 days to take action to set a minimum amount allowable, a minimum amount to be appropriated to education. And then beyond that, they can contribute an additional amount. The other driver with all of it is all of the 53 school districts around the state, their budgets are due to Juneau, the Department of Education, by July 15th. So all of this action really takes place in the spring, but there's a lot of work in the fall as well to mm-hmm. say this is what our projected enrollment is and this is mm-hmm. what we're looking at in terms mm-hmm. of rollover costs or year-to-year cost increases for yeah. our expenses. And yeah. really for us, it's an ongoing process. We have a budget update presented at every single school board meeting. We hold our school board meetings twice a month. And then, of course, we have everything online as well. So mm-hmm. we try to make it so that folks can participate at any point in the year mm-hmm. and get a sense of where we're at in the process.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to cue to you, Steve, because we had a little chat earlier about that citizens really need to understand that this is, as well as a budgetary exercise, it's a political exercise. And I thought you spoke pretty eloquently about it. And I just think it's worth mentioning here so that, you know, people like Carissa who are really interested. We try to give them the dates to be involved, but also understanding the process. Could you give your perspective on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, in Juneau right now, the process is very organic, and that is that everything touches everything else, and education doesn't sit as an isolated thing that gets funded by itself. It's part of the bigger picture, and the funding of education affects other fundings in different places, and politically it can affect decision-making on what gets funded and what does not get funded. And so I think it's incumbent on everyone to understand that when things are going on in Juneau, the decisions that are made are not necessarily decisions that are intended to directly affect education, but they're part of a political process that may be undone. And so while it's frustrating and it's infuriating for school districts to have to go through this process, what comes out at the end is not very much what it looks like in parts of the beginning or even in the middle or even toward the end. And so that's the biggest piece that's most frustrating for districts. The timing piece that Scott brought up was really important because ideally a legislature would convene in the fall and set its money for the following year by Christmas so that districts could then walk away and do their budget with a known level of revenue. But because it is a political process that winds its way from January into the middle of April, we do have to be part of that, and I think it's critical that everyone pays attention to that and tries to affect that and not just assume that just because a decision was made in March or a decision was made in early April, that's the end of the game. It's not. It's an ongoing piece that can be affected right up to the bitter end, including this week. And so I think that's an important piece for people to know about, that sometimes things are going on. It's not about education. It may be about something else, but they're mm-hmm. using education as a way to force that something else.
Mm-hmm. In your experience being a superintendent, I mean, public engagement, is it where you need it to be for education, or do you, what do you think about? I'm thinking about the sense that the great middle checks out, it gets complicated, they're busy, they're making a living and making school lunches, and they can't stay focused. And I guess, do you find that to be true, or do you think we have the level of engagement here that benefits education? And I know that's a broad, sweeping question.
No, I think we need more, and I think the previous caller with the idea of a local levy speaks to that. If the taxpayers had to vote directly for a school budget, the engagement would be much higher. Mm-hmm. And so that's to me is an advantage or possibly disadvantage, but I think where I grew up, that's happened every spring, and the people would debate and carry on and back and forth, and it was local control of how much money went locally to your school district. So I think that the amount of engagement because of a lack of that is probably not as good as it should be. Certainly there's a lot of interest, and I think there's a good level of interest, but I think you're right. I don't think people have felt the pain enough to get fully engaged, and mm-hmm. I think that's coming to us now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's never too late, right? I mean, there's the Legislative Information Office. There's legislative phone numbers on the website. There are ways to weigh even this week, and even things can change even up until the time the governor signs, right? I mean, there can be vetoes and, I don't know, adjustments made. So, it's a call for civic engagement. I think we had two good people call in during the show that really seemed committed, and we hope they grow in numbers and work towards the school system that they really want to have. We have one more really quick question. This, I think, is an easy answer. This came in on email. Do the funding formulas take into account areas that are growing in population, such as the Valley, or are the formulas strictly based? It's based on the number of students.
Yes,
right?
They do. It takes that into account. Growth is taken into account because that's your enrollment number.
Okay, so Franklin, we got that question answered for you. All right, well, we are out of time. Thank you, really. Thank you, Steve and Luke and Kathleen, for being willing to take on school funding on a sort of school budget 101 level. I really appreciate it. So thank you so much for your time, and thank you to our callers and listeners as well. Next week on Hometown Alaska, Charles Warforth is back as your host, and his topic is going to be eating local with seafood. Sounds delicious. I hope there's recipes involved. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the chief content officer for the Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. Thanks so much for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.